This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, very special show in The Think Tank this week. We have with us the two leading Democratic gubernatorial candidates, Senator Steve Farley from Tucson and ASU Professor David Garcia. In David's case, welcome back to The Think Tank. In
thank you.
Steve's case, welcome.
Hey, great to be here.
Steve, for you initially, Doug Ducey's going to run for governor for re-election, and he's going to say, I gave teachers 20% raises and I didn't raise taxes. How do you top that?
Well, the whole 20 by 2020 thing was a flat-out branding. It actually wasn't true. He gave a calculation of money based on what would be a 9% additional raise this year, with 5% the following year and 5% the year after that. But as I learned when I first joined the legislature, is you cannot tie the hands of a future legislature, so there's no guarantees for any of that future money. We actually have the money to be able to invest in a full 20% raise, and not just for classroom teachers, for all personnel who are educating our youth, whether they're counselors or bus drivers or cafeteria workers. We've just simply chosen to give that money away, and Governor Ducey has been complicit in that. In fact, when you look at our state budget, is about $10 billion a year is how much we pay on everything. We give away about $13.7 billion a year in corporate sales tax loopholes alone. And Governor Ducey signed to.
When you say the money's there, that's what you're referring to.
The money, it's not just untaxed. That. The money's there. It's not. It's being given away to out-of-state corporate interests. And that's what happens when you have a governor who is more interested in doing the bidding of a few out-of-state billionaires than the people of Arizona.
Now, if I understand the law correctly, to mess with that, though, you need a supermajority. Am I right?
Yeah, but I've been able to actually demonstrate that in my experience in the legislature. Last year, I had a bill that would force review of all 331 of those corporate sales tax loopholes at least once every 10 years. And if they could justify themselves to the overall economy, keep them. If they couldn't, get rid of them and recover that revenue.
It would require a supermajority to do
it. It passed out of the Senate 28-2, vastly more than the supermajority you would need to be able to get it done, because I've been able to work across the aisle effectively in my time in the legislature and actually carry things out.
All right, David, same question to you.
Yeah, well, I think a couple things come out of this. First and foremost, the real fundamental distrust of Doug Ducey in this case. Look, I think folks, parents still remember the promises from 1, 2, 3. And the promise was that step four would be positive and productive for public education. And step four was public school vouchers. And so I think the 20 by 20, the idea of promising that in the future, I don't think teachers are buying that. I don't think parents are buying it. And the level of distrust is unbelievably high. But in addition, our teachers learned a lesson going down to the Capitol. And they learned a really important lesson. And that is they really don't trust the legislature. And it's the reason why they have pushed their own initiative, the Invest in Ed Act, to make sure there's a dedicated funding source for public education, one that is sustainable, which is a real issue with Ducey's plan. But more particularly, it can't be touched by the legislature. They saw down there what happens with our legislature when they're in their classrooms teaching, and want to make sure that their efforts to create a solution to this are one that create a dedicated revenue source.
Now, the Invest in Ed Act, which you mentioned, you put a they on it, not a you, but that's the one, if I understand this correctly, that has a 3.4% bump in the income tax for those people, couples making $500K or more.
Yeah, well, it's a they in the sense that it is.
Are you in favor of that?
I'm in favor of that. Our team has endorsed it. Our team is out working to gather signatures, I believe, with our teachers. They're not just looking for a start to this issue. They're looking for a solution, and that solution is a dedicated revenue source.
So that is an extra legislative, that is a non-legislative solution.
It's a people-driven solution. Mm-hmm. And right now, we're in a moment in a time where we need a people-driven solution. And, you know, I do think that is a difference with respect to folks out there looking at policy differences between the two of us. Is I have come out in support, and our team is behind that initiative because our hardworking teachers are looking for an answer.
Senator Farley, I want you on the record on that. Do you favor that initiative?
Well, I find it interesting that David is talking about supporting $690 million in new money for education from raising income taxes. But he is also on the record saying that he would have voted no for the $405 million in new money for K-12 over and above inflation and enrollment growth that I voted for just a month ago on the Senate floor. That was the budget bill that provided that money for education. That's real money that's actually going to real raises next year.
What was the source of that money?
There's various different sources of money across the board. That was part of the budget process, and there was a number of different things that were going in there. Part of it was the growth in the economy. Part of it was an increase in the vehicle license tax. Part of it was a series of things that got into place to be able to fund this, to be able to make that go ahead.
I'm going to give Dr. Garcia a second to respond to that. But first, I'd like your answer on the Invest in Ed initiative. For or against?
Well, the problem I have is that as long as we're giving away so much money that we're collecting in taxes already, I have a hard time seeing that the best option is to increase our taxes further. So I'm waiting to see what happens when it's on the ballot. I will support anything that is new money to education. I just don't think that's the best way to do it.
Okay. I wanted to give Dr. Garcia a chance to respond to Senator Farley said that you did not support a $400 million package.
Well, I didn't support the 20 by 20 that we just spent time criticizing because it is not a solution. Look, our teachers did not walk out for a week for a start. They walked out for a solution. And I think that the vast majority of our Democratic legislators understood that, voted against the bill because it was not a solution. The solution that the teachers have put forward is a dedicated revenue source, and I stand behind that solution.
Let's look at what was on the table. Before the teachers walked out, Governor Ducey was offering a $33 million increase next year over and above inflation for K-12 schools.
Which sounds like a lot of money, but really it's
$33 million is not a whole lot.
Not
a $10
billion
budget.
Yeah.
But then the teachers walked out, and they did this. They forced Governor Ducey, with the help of those of us who were working as their allies on the inside the legislature, into a position where 3 weeks later, he was willing to give a $405 million increase. It was $33 million 3 weeks before, $405 million.
And turnabout on that, by the way, was right in this studio that we're sitting in right now.
Absolutely.
So it was quite memorable. One day it was 1%, and the next day 20%, that really was 9%, but
right.
And 9% now, it promised a 20%.
And that was all about the teachers. And the way you honor a truly grassroots movement, like all of these educators who occupied the Capitol for a week, watching me do my job at close range, they were galvanized now to make me governor because they saw me help them fight and get real results. That's actually almost 40% of what was cut since 2010 to our K-12 public education system. It's not the whole thing, but it's a good start, and it should have been supported by my opponent.
Dr. Garcia, you get a minute or so,
and then we
have to go to break.
We agree on one thing. The teachers did it without question. And now the teachers are going to be out walking in this summer heat to find a solution. And I stand with those teachers as they're out gathering support, looking to get this initiative on the ballot, want them to understand that I continue to stand with them and will going forward.
And the teachers know the only solution to this is not yet another piecemeal solution of funding that would involve increasing taxes. The solution is to changing the leadership in the governor's office and the legislature, and that's why they're galvanized to work on campaigns.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment with State Senator Steve Farley and ASU Education Professor Dr. David Garcia, both of whom would like to be our next governor. We'll be back in the Think Tank in just a minute.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are back. State Senator Steve Farley, ASU Education Professor Dr. David Garcia, you are both running for governor. A question to each of you. I want to get in this segment into taxes, but I want to start. And essentially, the question is this: as a Democratic governor, prospective Democratic governor, how can you get anything through the legislature when even Doug Ducey couldn't?
I think that's a good question. It's a couple things. Number one, going back to the previous segment, it's one of the reasons why citizens recognize they've got to go around the legislature. And it's going back to their fellow citizens for solutions. It is a start. I am on record that the only way we're going to get ourselves out of these issues is to raise revenue. And as I mentioned, our teachers have chosen a vehicle to do that. I think it's a vehicle that it works for Arizona, by the way. It helps balance our tax structure in this state. But in addition, I think we've got to look at a circumstance, and we have a really good example of this recently in Janet Napolitano, who was able to set a direction. That's your job as governor, is to set a direction. And over time, and in working with the legislature, which I have done during my time, that's when you, over time, get your priorities in place.
You know, if I could, and I'll get to you, Senator Farley, in just a minute, just to pick up on that, my observation of how the system worked with Governor Napolitano is that it worked pretty well in times of high prosperity, because basically she cut implicitly a deal with the legislature, which was, I won't ask for any increases in taxes as long as we get to we can keep most of the increasing revenue stream that was coming in during her governorship, and she got full day K and the like. Senator Farley, maybe you can, you were there for, did you overlap with her?
I was. I served for 2 years of the Napolitano administration.
Okay. Is that a fair statement of how she?
Well, that's part of it. But even with Janet Napolitano, when she first came into office, she was a little bit afraid of the legislature. And that's happened with a lot of governors who haven't had experience with the legislature. And I think that's one of the things I really bring to the table. It's unique. My experience is the only Democratic candidate who has ever served in elected office, and I've served 12 years, six in the House, six in the Senate. I have a deep understanding of the people, the policies, and the processes that a governor has to deal with to be effective. And I have been able to do that with a strong track record. One of my top moments of being in the legislature is when Jan Brewer, of all people, with whom I disagreed about a whole lot of things, she reached out to me and said, do you think you can hold the caucus together if we decide to expand Medicaid health care to 400,000 people in poverty? And I said, yes, we can. We worked together. We found some Republicans. We rolled the president. We rolled the speaker. And we managed to get that through.
You did that with almost all the Democrats, or all of the Democrats and a handful of Republicans.
Exactly. And we managed to keep our hospitals afloat and literally save lives. It was a phenomenal success. And long before I was an elected official, I was working to get better transportation in place in Pima County. And I worked just as a small business owner in Pima County who convened coalitions of people who had never worked together before, who in fact battled to five previous failed initiatives over the previous 4 years. And we finally got through a 20-year transportation plan worth $2 billion with a 60-40 vote. And I was the key person that brought those coalitions together to make it happen. You have to bring people together, and you can find things that people have in common, even across the aisle. And I'm convinced that that's one way we can stop this polarization that is plaguing our country, is if we start to work together just to solve problems, just put grownups in the room again instead of reality show stars. And we end up actually being able to do important things and help make people's lives better. And that's what this is supposed to be about.
Dr. Garcia, I think I hear Senator Farley citing experience as an attribute. Do you want to respond to that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I worked at the legislature myself. I spent time there working as an analyst. I'm also the only one who has executive experience. I was the associate superintendent for the state of Arizona, so I have been in a position working with the state across corner to corner. And you've got important life experiences. I'm an Army vet. That matters to a lot of Arizonans, for example. And for our educators, this one matters. They've had a lot of folks go out and say they're going to be the next education governor. It's a different circumstance with me. It's one of the reasons why we've gotten the support, for example, of the Arizona Education Association, and that is for the first time in a long time, we're going to have a governor who's an educator, who has a very different view of the world. And education is going to be the central issue in November.
I think that's clear. I don't think – do you expect to see anybody running on anything other than that they're going to be the education governor?
Well, I think that's going to take all the air out of the room. It is the public issue. Mm-hmm. You know, I get folks asking our campaign, why don't you talk about issue X and issue Y? I think every campaign is talking about many issues, but the one that's resonating and the one that is getting people interested and excited off the couch is public education. And it's because it is the issue that we have neglected most in this state. It's extremely important. And we will not have a governor more committed to public education than me.
And the teachers brought that to the fore.
And the teachers brought that to the fore, no question.
One of the things I've been confused about with Professor Garcia's career is I know that he's talked about that he served under Lisa Graham Keegan, the superintendent of schools in the 1990s as an associate superintendent. I believe he was also, the title was director of policy. At the time, she was inventing charter schools and private school vouchers. And I know people talk about Professor Garcia as being the professor of school choice at ASU, and he, in fact, sat on the charter school board for 4 years. So when you talk about education, it isn't just about public education. Yeah, there's some major charter school support in Professor Garcia's background, and I think a lot of teachers are a little bit disturbed by that from traditional district schools. When he talked about being a big fan of school choice at the Flagstaff AEA debate last fall, I think a lot of people were very surprised and a little dismayed.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, here's how I see it. Many thousands of families in Arizona choose to be in traditional public schools. That is a choice.
We got the majority.
Look, the way that people talk about school choice is only those who have gotten up and exited have chosen. That is wrong. My daughter attends a traditional public school in the Phoenix Elementary School District, and we need to stand up and say that is a choice, because otherwise we forget and will not honor the choices of the hundreds and thousands of public school parents who aren't trapped or left behind. They're making that choice specifically. As for the rest, that's my area of study, school choice. It's what I study. Actually, it's what the book's coming out in September that I wrote on school choice from MIT Press. It's my academic area, and it's one in which I believe every Arizona family is looking for great choices within a public school system. And there are a lot of them. I'll give you one quick example is if you go downtown Phoenix, there is a coding academy. It is a great choice, coding as in computer coding. Mm-hmm. It is a great choice, put together by the Phoenix Union High School District.
Okay, Senator Farley, you got maybe 30 seconds.
I'm just not clear that somebody who had a part in inventing charter schools is the best person to lead our public education system at this point as a state, as governor. And I think that needs to be explained a little bit more carefully.
Okay, we will be back, and we will pick up. We're going to try not to let education take all the air. It is number one, but it can't be the only issue, because the other things are going to come up. We will return in a minute or so in the think tank, and we're going to talk about taxes and what your feelings are about various alternatives in the think tank, KTAR.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back with two of the leading Democratic candidates for governor, State Senator Steve Farley and ASU Education Professor Dr. David Garcia. We've talked about education, and it's clearly number one issue in the state, and I think it's that way because the teachers made it so. At the same time, this intersects with another issue, which is taxes. You don't fund education without revenue. And I want to make a couple of observations about the tax system and then put that in the form of a question. First of all, I think if you look at taxes in totality, Arizona has a very regressive tax system. We have very high sales taxes, which are regressive. Regressive means that people of relatively lower income pay a higher proportion. If you make $20,000 a year, you're probably spending most of that on stuff that's taxable. If you make $20 million a year, you only need so many groceries, so many suits of clothes and the like. We have low property taxes. Some people might like it lower, but if you move to any other state, you quickly realize how low our property taxes. And we have fairly low income taxes overall. So those things that tend to be progressive are much lower here. Those things that tend to hit the poor and the working class the most are higher here. So Democrats generally talk like they don't like regressive tax systems, but at the same time, the public has always been more easily enticed into a sales tax increase, I think because even though it's regressive, they tend to think of it as just pennies at a time. Question to you, Dr. Garcia, what would you do to change our tax system, if anything?
Well, we got to go back to the same issue. There's an issue on the table that many thousands of our teachers are going to work toward, and it is the Invest in Ed Act. Mm-hmm. And it addresses the issues that you're talking about. It is more progressive. You mentioned it, and you're right. Arizona has one of the most.
Well, you got to be half million before you pay a nickel.
Half million before exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it is not only a quality idea to support public education, it's a sound public policy idea for all the reasons you just mentioned right there with respect to the regressivity of Arizona's tax structure. And, you know, one of the questions I get is, well, but you're only having the top 1% pay. But we've got to keep in mind a couple of things. Number one, we just had, if not all, nearly all of our local bonds and overrides passed last time around in 2016. Your working families in Arizona already paying for public education. This is a shared effort. And it is through a regressive sales tax. It's through increases in property taxes, as well as more progressive measures like Invest in Ed, that we put together a tax structure and portfolio in Arizona that is more balanced, it is dedicated, that is sustainable, and that can support public education.
Senator Farley?
This is the kind of question that really excites me, because I'm the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee. I was a ranking member on the House Ways and Means Committee. I've done that for 12 years. In addition to being a public artist, I have my right brain going and my left brain going with my numbers. So I'm thrilled about the opportunities that are there, and that's why I believe that raising taxes is not something we need to do as long as we're giving so much away. We can, in fact, lower taxes while increasing our education spending by $2 billion a year if we get rid of corporate sales tax loopholes. Those are things like, as I mentioned before, there are $13.7 billion a year we lose, and that's a floor, not a ceiling.
The big one is taxing services. Would you eliminate that?
There's a lot of different ones, mm-hmm. and that's the sort of thing that has to happen in a bipartisan way. Mm-hmm. But let me explain to you some of these are, and Governor Ducey just signed in another bunch of them this year. They happen because lobbyists go to the legislature and get themselves breaks for their companies. That's the vast majority of them. There's 331 of these things. The classic example is that if you buy a 3-inch pipe at the hardware store, you pay sales tax. If you buy a 4-inch pipe, you don't. And that doesn't make sense unless you're a corporation that buys a lot of 4-inch pipe in Arizona. And there is one. It's called Southwest Gas. It's based in Nevada. Each month, we pay them a bill. They take some of that money. They hire a lobbyist. They get a break. There's 331 sales tax loopholes just like that. And if we were able to eliminate just $3 billion worth of those, we could lower our sales tax rate by a full percent, making our sales tax code less regressive, while increasing education spending by $2 billion a year and restore all the funding, not just for K-12, but for our community colleges and for our universities, and actually invest some in our transportation infrastructure as well for a change.
Dr. Garcia?
Yeah, I don't see these options as mutually exclusive, personally. Look, as governor, we need every single tool on the table to address this issue. It includes closing corporate tax loopholes. It includes looking at tax credits in Arizona that are allowing dollars to exit to private schools. And if we're going to take this seriously and we want every tool available to us, it needs to include raising revenue as well. This is a big problem. I think we can all agree with that. But for me personally, if we're going to address this problem for the magnitude that it is, we need every tool available to us. And it includes not only closing tax loopholes, closing tax credits, but also raising revenue as well.
Let me if I could pick up on one of those specifically. You mentioned tax credits. That's a little bit different from loopholes or exemptions from sales tax. There's 30 or 40 of them when you fill out your income taxes. And a lot of them sound like they're good things, and individually they may be. I wonder how you would feel about just saying, all right, there may be some good stuff in there, but if we're legitimating the idea of tax credits for a long list of things, we're really kind of undermining the simplicity and the fairness of the tax. Would you favor axing all of those?
I think we have to look at them one by one to make mm-hmm. that happen. But
why, here's my problem is if you're going to take away mine, then I'm not going to want you to take
absolutely.
Away, you know.
But these things can happen mm-hmm. if you come to a consensus about making mm-hmm. work. If we have a bipartisan coalition to be able to go through and mm-hmm. review these and decide which are going to work and which aren't.
Keep in mind,
truly public and don't involve lobbyists deciding to get their pet projects.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Every single one of those has a very powerful
absolutely.
Lobby. That's why it's in the law.
But that's why there has to be somebody who has the experience and the ability in the governor's office to do leadership and educate the public about what exactly is happening. Because for me, when you've got a revenue bucket that has 331 holes mm-hmm. in it, you got to seal some of those holes before you start putting more water into it. That's what it comes down to. And that means we got to start working on sealing those loopholes before we start pouring more money into the bucket.
Let me ask you both about one that's not exactly a loophole, but it has been so long since we've touched it that it's de facto a massively undertaxed thing, and that is the gas tax. Do you know when the last time we touched the gas tax?
1991.
Yeah. And you know what the gas tax is?
18 cents a gallon.
Prices are going up. Uses is going down in some cases. In other words,
if we adjusted for inflation alone, it should be 46 cents per gallon.
Right. And that's, I think, something that people often don't understand. Same thing with minimum wage. I pointed out a piece a while back. If you took the 1968 minimum wage and adjusted it for inflation, it comes out to about 11 something an hour. In other words, it's That sounds like a high number, but not when you realize we've already been there before.
Right.
But Mike, you mentioned something that I do think is important, because we can go back and look at these all individually, but you hit the nail on the head. There is an underlying logic to all of these, and that is folks going down to the legislature and arguing that they're going to take their piece before it goes into the general fund. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of principle, I don't think that's good public policy. Mm-hmm. And I don't, because everybody's going to have their probably worthy individual argument. But in the end, we deplete the opportunity for the legislature to make decisions. We no longer work collectively, which I think is important. And I think for me personally, we've got to get back to where folks understand from a leadership perspective exactly where people are coming from. And with respect to my stance on this, I think the idea of a tax credit, this logic that you can go in and, again, carve out your piece before it gets to the general fund.
And every one of them sounds good at some level.
And yeah, you're going to go through and everyone's going to give you a good argument. But in the end, it's the same basic problem. Are you going to allow anybody to go in and do that before it gets to the collective collective general fund? And I think that idea is bad public policy. I mean, we've had that habit in Arizona now for over a decade. And I think we need to make it clear that, you know, we both retroactively and going forward.
I have an old friend who was the staff director for the Joint Committee on Taxation in Congress. And he pointed out, and I think the language matters. He said, you got to look at these things. These things are tax expenditures. Because even though they're some sort of credit or exemption, the impact on the budget is exactly the same as if you took that money and you spent it on something.
That's exactly why the Department of Revenue has something called the Tax Expenditure Report that lists every one of these corporate sales tax loopholes and all the other tax credits and all the other tax giveaways that we've done. Mm-hmm. We have to stop giving away our money to out-of-state interests, period. We've got to work on that and make that happen. What that takes is someone with the experience in understanding the code inside out like I have, and the experience of working with the legislature across the aisle. I remember I had that bill that would have forced review of all 331 of these corporate sales tax loopholes and get rid of the ones that aren't working for us, and it had a 28-2 Senate vote, with some of the most conservative members of the Senate voting in favor of it.
My guess is they killed that in the House.
Ducey called in a hit at the House Ways and Means Committee by threatening to veto the bills of.
So basically, you bury it in a committee and no House member has to vote.
Yeah, but that's not going to be a problem when I'm governor.
All right. Quick to each of you, we referenced gas tax. You won't take a look at the gas tax?
Well, I think we have to look at everything. Look, as I said before, you need to have every single tool on the table. It is looking at all of these exemptions and making sure they remain good public policy for Arizona. It is looking at tax credits and, again, making sure that that is a good public policy direction for Arizona. And if we're going to address this seriously, we've got to get behind our teachers and make it clear that we need a dedicated revenue source for education, too. We need every single one of those tools at the table. I don't understand why you'd walk into a negotiation and take one off the table. You want to make sure you have them all with you if you're going to go in and address this issue.
Senator Farley, you got last word, and then we'll
I think break. That was a question about transportation. That's actually in my wheelhouse big time, too, because I'm that passionate about getting transportation infrastructure into place. The problem is a gas tax alone isn't going to solve it. We have increasing numbers of cars with higher mileage and some that don't use gas at all. Mm-hmm. It's not fair that somebody who can afford a $120,000 a year Tesla should have to pay nothing for the roadways they use, while somebody who has a $200 clunker has to pay the full gas tax. We have to examine other options to be able to fund our transportation system and have a great infrastructure that we all use every day.
Okay, we will be back. We're going to talk about some of the recent undemocratic instincts, small d democratic here, and discuss those in our concluding section of the Think Tank. We're here with Senator Steve Farley and Dr. David Garcia. Be back in the Think Tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back, concluding segment with the two leading Democratic candidates for governor, ASU professor Dr. David Garcia, State Senator Steve Farley from Tucson. There is an initiative being passed around right now to outlaw dark money, basically requiring full disclosure. I'm going to go out on a wild limb and infer that you're both in favor. A question for each of you. You both have active campaigns involved. Have either of you been involved in helping that effort at all? Dr. Garcia.
We have. We have a very extensive field team on our campaign. Almost 5,000 people across the state are involved. And whenever possible, we work with the Dirty Money Initiative and, again, the Invest in Ed initiative. as well. Look, dirty money is going to be the demise of our democracy if we don't get a handle on it. And it's one of the a key reason why our team is working hard to make sure that that initiative is on the ballot, because we got to stop Arizona being the place that nationally we funnel dirty money through. And it's been part of our
We've been bagmen for California in the past.
And it's part of, you know, and it's part of this corruption narrative. The folks look at Arizona and see it as a corrupt state. And that's one of the main reasons why.
Senator Farley?
I actually helped to write that initiative with Terry Goddard. In fact, it was inspired by my 2013 bill that I originally wrote that would force people who receive the ultimate receivers of the money to reveal who the ultimate giver was, so we could avoid these shell corporations that were set up to hide who gave it in the first place. I've been attacking dark money in all of its forms. I'm one of the leading people in the country, one of the leading experts attacking ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. That's an organization funded by corporations nationally that flies Republican legislators from around the country to these junkets. They wine and dine them, and they give them these what they call model bills that then they take back to the legislature and they run. In fact, in 2012, Bill Moyers came out and filmed me for his documentary called The United States of ALEC. And the first 3 minutes of that documentary, which you can still see online at unitedstatesofalec.org, is an interview with me about doing that. We have had far too much influence from people from out of state, large corporate interests, and our current governor is the ultimate example of his chief of staff, who actually does the policy for the governor. The governor reads the talking points, is a guy who was the former House Speaker, and after he became the House Speaker, he headed up the organization that funneled the Koch Network money into various dark money organizations and various Republican campaigns around the country. And I think we've seen that the types of decisions that come out of that type of governorship are not ones for the best interest of the people of Arizona, but the best interest of the people who are the out-of-state corporate folks who want him to be governor again.
Let me pick up on that and ask you, David. You know, I know what ALEC is, and it's fairly stated here, and they're an invidious force in terms of influencing our politics. But to the average citizen, that eyes glaze over, and that's insider stuff. How do you communicate things like that to a general public to make them understand what's at stake?
It's a great question. And when you hear ALEC, even when you hear Koch brothers, folks don't understand. And I think a lot of normal regular Arizonans don't get it. I think the best way that I describe it, as well as dirty money, is just how you would hold yourself accountable. Look, we got a circumstance here in Arizona. When you look at Doug Ducey, we're looking at somebody who has been supported and is in that governor's seat largely because of the impact of not Arizonans. These aren't your neighbors that are helping here. These aren't folks in your community that are having a say. These are folks, and as a matter of fairness, who have the influence and the money to have access to public officials. And not only access, but tremendous influence as well. You know, what folks may not understand about ALEC is they pull legislators from across the country, including Arizona, especially Arizona, out to junkets where they sit, wine, dine them, get influenced by corporate interest, and hand them legislation to come back and put into place in their home states.
I remember reading online report of, I won't name names, but Arizona legislator who was taken out to one of those, and he just was effusive in describing what a good thing it was. And I met Newt Gingrich, and I did this, and I did this. And then the last line really kicked me. It said, and I did all this at no government expense.
And then they come calling. And then ALEC comes calling. ALEC and these outside interests and the Koch brothers come calling. You know, look, after Ducey passed the voucher bill, folks like Betsy DeVos were the first to congratulate him. It's not Arizona. And it's not Arizona's voice that you hear, because not only are they running these bills, but they're going to come calling and make sure that the folks that they bought and paid for are getting their money's worth. And I
think it's in the best dinner wasn't free.
They're never free.
And it's important to point out that Debbie Lesko, who is the newest congresswoman from the West Valley, was the leader of the ALEC group in the Arizona legislature for many, many years. And that's yet another reason for Dr. Tipernini to beat her in November as well.
Well, it was surprising me. That's a 25% Republican district. She won by 5. I'm inferring there were a whole lot of teachers out in that district.
There were a whole lot of everybody out. That's one of the most exciting things about this election is people are galvanized. It's Democrats are galvanized, but it's also independents. And I've seen a lot of Republicans who are sick and tired of these devastating cuts to public education and other things. There's a supervisor named Buster Johnson out in Mojave County who wrote an op-ed in the Havasu News last summer that got to a lot of rural areas around the state. And as I've traveled around the state for the last 18 months, I've heard this from Republicans who called Ducey a hypocrite. And he explained in his op-ed he was a hypocrite because he bragged about balancing a state budget without raising taxes, but all he did was shove responsibilities and costs onto cities, counties, and school districts who had to raise their taxes to balance their budgets.
And the school districts
Tea Party doesn't like that either.
And the school districts can't do that completely because there's caps on what they can do without an override.
Exactly. So. But that's the sort of thing, the sort of hypocrisy that I think even the Tea Party doesn't like. So there's not a lot of enthusiasm, even on the part of Republicans, for reelecting Governor Ducey.
I think that the idea of a blue wave, we're seeing it all over the place. I do think it's important. And Mike, I want to just take a couple minutes and talk about what I think is the most important issue, and that is winning.
And let me give you I'll give you a minute each because we've got about 2 minutes left. You can have half of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, in the end, we can't just wait for this blue wave to happen. We got to go create it. And our campaign is changing the electorate. We can expand the Democratic base to people that generally do not to sit out elections. It's what our campaign is doing with 5,000 people. Check us out online at DG4AZ.com. You're going to see we have tremendous both local and national support, because unless we bring out voter turnout in not just in the traditional Democratic base, but way beyond, we're not going to win this, but it's exactly what our campaign is going to do and the reason why we're going to win.
Okay, Senator Farley.
Winning is absolutely important. That's why it's important for people to know that I'm the only Democratic candidate who has ever won an election, and I've won six in a row. So I know how to win, and the more I'm going out of the state and working as hard as I can, I'll tell you, being 12 years in the minority in this legislature puts some fire in your belly. So I've got the energy to go around everywhere, get every vote possible. I've been able to outraise my opponents more than 2-1 because I'm willing to be able to talk to the thousands and thousands of Arizonans who give me what they can, 10, 20, 50 bucks. And it's hard work, but it's worth it, because when you're running against a guy who's backed by the Koch brothers, you've got to do everything you can to win this race. And we have to put the best person to be able to govern from day one with the experience I have and the best person able to win into that chair in November.
Well, I'd like to thank you both, Senator Steve Farley from Tucson, ASU professor David Garcia, Democratic candidates for governor. I can't believe it at the end. You actually, especially you, David, stayed well under a minute. So we actually had a few seconds, but I'm not opening it up again because we'll run over. But we will run this show at our normal time. New normal time is 1 in the afternoon, but it repeats at 9 p.m. And we'll be back next week in the Think Tank with more public policy in the Think Tank on KTAR.